I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Still to come, we're going to look at the future of jazz through the eyes of a composer and jazz radio host who wonders what will happen as fewer radio stations play the music. But first, a new film has opened recently, playing in selected cities across the country. La Misma Luna, or Under the Same Moon, tells the story of Carlitos, a young boy from Mexico in search of the mother who left him behind in the care of his grandmother as the mother worked to support the family in the U.S. When the grandmother dies, the boy decides to make his way north alone.
Hey, kid, what are you doing here?
Why don't you come with us, all right?
No, I'm with my friend.
All right, kid.
No.
Come on. Let's go. Let's go. Relax. Stop fighting. Relax.
Hey! Leave him alone!
It's okay, kid. You're
safe.
God damn it!
Don't move! Corre!
Bring him back this way.
Vete! Correle! Corre!
Corre! It's a harrowing tale told with flair. But even more frightening, activists say, are the real facilities where families who illegally cross U.S. borders are detained. There are two, one in Berks County, Pennsylvania, and the other in Taylor, Texas. The Texas facility was the focus of a recent article in the New Yorker magazine. Here to discuss this are Michelle Brunet, director of the Women's Commission for Refugee Women and Children, a detention and asylum program, and Lorena Castro, a Colombian native who was 12 when she arrived in America with her mother and two sisters. They spent 2 years in detention. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.
You're welcome.
Hello.
I want to mention that we invited a representative from the Department of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, to join our conversation. They declined, but they sent a written statement, which I'll read a little later. Michelle, I want to start with you. You've worked at two of these centers. You visited both of the centers.
Yes,
where
I visited both.
Families are detained. If you just describe them, tell me why they were created and how they were created.
Sure. It's a complicated history, but in basic terms, what used to happen is that most often families who were apprehended having crossed the border or apprehended without documentation were either released pending a hearing before an immigration judge, or what started to happen more and more in the late 90s and after 2001 was that they were separated. So the children were taken to a detention facility for children, and the adults were taken to adult detention facilities, which very often were our prisons. Advocates and others started complaining about this to Congress. Congress got a wind of it and decided that they didn't think this was an appropriate practice because sometimes these kids, I have to point out, were very, very young. We had children as young as 6 months, breastfeeding children that were being separated from their parents and put into foster care or some other sort of care while their parents were taken to prison. So Congress put out a report in several years in a row, actually, saying that children and families should not be separated, that they should be put into alternative programs, but that if absolutely necessary to detain them, that they should be detained in non-penal home-like environments. This all combined with a new initiative by ICE, which they refer to as the end of catch and release. In 2006, ICE announced that they were opening a new facility to house families. This was the T. Don Hutto facility. That would be able to house over 500 individual family members, and that they were ending the practice of catch and release so that all families apprehended at the border or at entry points and even eventually internally in the country were detained, either at the Hutto facility, which is the larger of the two, or at the facility in the Berks facility in Pennsylvania.
And just briefly, what was the problem with catch and release? The concern was that people would just disappear into the community.
Yeah, and I think that's a valid thing to take into consideration. A lot of people, when just released and told, you know, show up on this date for a hearing, a lot of people were not appearing for those hearings.
I want to read the statement now from the from ICE, the Department of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. As I mentioned earlier, we had invited them to join our conversation. They said that they were unavailable, but this is the statement that they sent. They said the T. Don Hutto Family Residential Facility in Taylor, Texas is one of the major reasons the Department of Homeland Security has been able to successfully end the catch and release of illegal aliens at the southern border. ICE also operates the Berks Family Residential Center in Leesport, Pennsylvania. These facilities are an effective and humane alternative to maintain the unity of alien families as they await the outcome of their immigration hearings or return to their home countries.
Well, I have a couple of things to say about that. I mean, I think, yes, it was an end of catch and release. There's no question that it effectively ended that process. That was its main intent. And there are alternatives to traditional strict prison-type detention. There are all sorts of programs out there, pre-hearing release programs. Some of them involve electronic bracelets. Some of them involve checking in that you know, can ensure that people show up for their hearings. And these models are out there, and they have nine appearance rates for people showing up in the 90s.
And just briefly again, who makes up the population in these facilities, and what percentage are children?
Well, I don't have any actual statistics, but based on our visits and conversations with ICE, at least half of them are children, because nobody's in any of these facilities without a child. And for the most part, it's single parents that come across. So over 50%. And they are from all over the world. Majority probably from Central or South America, but really Iraqis, Iranians, Jordanians, people from Africa, from all over the world.
Lorena, you were 12 when you came here with your family. I understand it. You're 15 now, and you're seeking asylum in Toronto. Your family was held at Berks. Can I just ask you, why did your family want to come to the U.S.?
The thing was that in Colombia, we didn't have the economy to, like, you know, my mom to support us. And she's a single mother. So she decided to go to the United States to be better and to give us a better future, better opportunities there. So, yeah, and for my grandmother, too, because we haven't seen her life for about 7 years. So we decided to go to the United States for those two reasons, for a better future and for my grandmother.
Lorena, I think people would like to know why your family came here. And you did make a claim for asylum to the degree that you can. I know you were young at the time. Can you tell us anything about why?
Well, I think that's... I don't know. I don't know. What can I say?
Michelle, perhaps you could help us here because you worked on Lorena's case. Can you help us a little bit without compromising too many details of the family's privacy?
Sure. Lorena's mother has filed a claim for asylum based on domestic violence in her home country of Colombia.
If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More. And we're talking with Michelle Brunet, the director of the Women's Commission for Refugee Women and Children, and Lorena Castro. She's a Colombian native who was 12 when she was placed in a detention center for 2 years. We're talking about detention centers that house immigrants and their children while they await asylum in the U.S. What do you remember about the Berks family shelter?
I remember the good stuff and the bad stuff, like the punishments that they did to me and to the other kids.
Like what?
For almost everything. For talking to males. And the thing was that it was this guy, and he was 17 years old, and at that time I was like 14 years old. And then we started to talk and everything, and we always talk. And by the staff, that was a wrong thing. They thought that we were boyfriend and girlfriend or something like that, right?
So they wanted to discourage you from talking to a boy?
Yeah.
Or a young man?
Yeah. And then, and that's not allowed there, you know, to have a boyfriend or to send letters to anyone. No, that's not allowed. So we never do nothing like that. And then they punish us like for 2 weeks without talking to each other. So we couldn't talk. And then after that, well, I remember that the third week we start talking again. And then, they were very serious when they said, if you guys keep talking, we're going to sit you guys on the hall for 2 days. And then you, Lorena, not going to be able to talk to nobody except, like, your mom and your two sisters. And they told us that next time they see us talking, that we were going to be another detention for young people, like, you know, for teenagers.
A juvenile detention facility.
Yeah, juvenile detention, yeah.
And it's also my understanding that they told you couldn't speak to anybody outside
to
of your family
anybody,
for
anybody.
A month. Was that
for
right?
For a month. Yeah, that's right.
Michelle, what do you have to say about that?
Well, you know, this is a good example of the problems that came up with discipline. When we visited the facilities, we asked what the disciplinary procedures were, because it's one of the most obvious kind of conflicting issues that's going to happen when you have families detained. And the official position of the government was that parents discipline their own children and they don't get involved. And they said that they had no guidelines for how children would be disciplined because it was irrelevant. Only parents would be disciplining the children. But as you can see, that's not really the case. And, you know, it seems pretty intuitive that sometimes in a situation like that, you're going to have situations where the parents aren't able or aren't willing to do what the guards might want.
Michelle, why is it that advocates like yourself have been concerned about the conditions at these facilities. Why have people been so concerned about the children who are kept there? Obviously, the original intention was to keep kids with their families. So what's the problem?
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, as you say, we were concerned about the separation of families. So the idea that they're not separating families anymore could, at first glance, be seen as an improvement. But as I said, Congress indicated that these families should be released when possible and only when necessary detained, and then in non-penal home-like environments. So when we initially set out to look at these facilities, we just wanted to see what they were like. We know that ICE facilities in general are not nice places. There's a lot of issues around conditions generally. So we wanted to visit them. And I have to say that we were pretty surprised by the conditions, particularly at the Hutto Center in Texas, although, and that's what's gotten a lot of the attention because originally it was much harsher than where Lorena was held. But I think a lot of the disciplinary and kind of structural problems remain. I mean, there's no...
Well, what were the conditions?
The conditions were very prison-like. Hutto is a former prison. It's a former medium-security prison. They had not been really amended since the original building of the facility. So it was, you were sleeping in a prison cell with your children. There were uniformed guards. It was quite restrictive. And I think what we really found there was a breakdown of family structure and a lot of depression.
Was there any schooling available?
Well, quite surprisingly, when we first visited in December of 2006, children received 1 hour of education a day. And that hour of education, I would say, was grossly inappropriate.
What about playing? I mean, some of these are very small children. Do they have any room to run around, to blow off steam? Were there any toys?
There is a playground at the Hutto facility. But when we were there, we were told by the children that many of the children had never seen the playground or had never been on the playground. They could only see it from, you know, one of the little windows in the recreation room. They had 1 hour of recreation a day.
So they were expected to stay in a cell all day with their parents?
Well, there's a pod system at Hutto. So the way it works is that there's cells surrounding a common area. So during certain times of the day, they had to be in their cell for counts and, you know, during certain hours of the night. And then otherwise, they were in this common area that had a couple sofas, plastic sofas made of a special material that I think they use commonly in prisons, and then a couple televisions. There were no toys in that common area at the time that we visited.
One of the points that the New Yorker made is that the way you run a prison for adults is very different from the way you manage a facility involving children, and that sometimes the people running these facilities didn't understand that. For example, these head counts, which of course is a standard procedure in a prison, that sometimes young children can't stand still that long, and that there were reports of, you know, kids who weren't even allowed to go to the bathroom while these head counts were taking place. Was that still going on when you visited?
Well, when I visited, all of that was happening. After our visit and after we issued our report and a lot of this became public, there were some immediate changes that were made. And then eventually the ACLU and the University of Texas filed a lawsuit against ICE regarding the Hutto facility in particular. And since that time, a lot of changes have occurred. So I don't want to give the impression that those conditions that I just described still exist, because it is much better now. But I think, again, the question still remains, are we a country that wants to detain families? There's no good model for detaining families.
Lorraine, I wanted to ask you, what did you do all day as a 12-year-old? Did you go to school?
I was so bored. Yeah. During the week, we always had to go to school. And the school was inside the shelter. And then we went to lunch and we were playing some games that were in the TV room or something like that. And then we watched TV. And then like at 3, we have to go back to school and then come back again. And yeah, that was a routine every day.
Is that so bad? Is that really so bad?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Why?
Because,
I mean, because kids have to go to school all day. That's what they have to do.
Yeah, I know. I know, yeah. But sometimes it was so frustrated because even the teachers sometimes get on you, you know, like they start not liking you because you're getting with... I was one of the baddest girl for them because I never let them talk to me like bad or yelling at me, never.
Lorraine, I want to ask you a hard question, but you're a big girl now, and I want to hear what you have to say about this. Is there are people who say you can't expect too much if you're here illegally, that sometimes you have to go through something like this if you're going across illegally. If someone were to have that point of view, what would you say?
Well, I think that's a good and a bad thing. A good thing because, yeah, they should keep you somewhere that you're safe on a shelter, right? But not like that. You should be free to go out, you know? And if you cross the country illegally is because of some reason, you know, because the United States government don't let immigrants to pass because they think that they're going to do something bad to the country, right? And the only thing they try to do is, like, get a work, try to support their family, try to get better futures for their kids and everything. And that's what the United States government don't see about that. They only see the bad way of us. And I think that's why they keep us on jail, could say, or in these kind of shelters of immigration to, like, I don't know, maybe to teach us a lesson not to cross other countries, like, illegally, or just to punish us. I don't know. I just don't get it.
Why should people care about this who are generally skeptical of immigration right now? As you understand, it's a very volatile issue in the country, and a lot of people say, do you know what, these parents put these kids in this situation by bringing them here illegally. To people who feel that way, what would you say?
A couple things. I mean, a lot of it has to do with the conditions. I think we do not argue the point that we need to have some system for keeping tabs on people and ensuring that they appear for hearings, but there are humane ways of doing it. And I will say much more cost-effective way. This is a very expensive way of ensuring that people appear for their hearings.
Lorena, finally, how are you doing now?
Oh, I'm doing very well. Very, very well.
And you live in Toronto?
Yeah, I'm living in Toronto. Mm-hmm. I'm still going to school and everything.
And how are you and your mom and your sisters?
Well, they're very good. My sisters are, you know, the same school, and my mom is, well, she's good.
I'm happy to hear it. Lorena Castro is a native of Colombia. She's currently seeking asylum with her family in Toronto, Canada. She, along with her family, were held for 2 years at a facility in Berks, Pennsylvania. Michelle Brunet is director of the Women's Commission for Refugee Women and Children. It's a detention and asylum advocacy program. She was kind enough to join me here in our studios in Washington. I want to say again that we asked the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency to join our conversation. They declined, but they issued a written statement, and we'll post it on our website. Thank you all so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you for listening to us.